Chapter 49. Thorson kept me from bleeding to death from the cut Peabody had given me. The Swede and his backup squad had been faced with a long run to catch up, a lot of locked gates, and the confusion we'd left in our wake. They reached me about 3 minutes after Morgan died. They did their best to revive Morgan, but his body had taken enough torment and lost too much blood. They didn't even bother with Peabody. Morgan had double-tapped the traitor's head with Lucio's pistol. They bundled me off to the infirmary, where Injun Joe and a crew of healers, some of whom had gone to medical school when the efficacy of leeches was still being debated, were caring for those wounded in the attack. After that, things fell into place without requiring my participation. The senior council managed to contain and banish the Mordite-infused mist fiend, a rare and dangerous gaseous being from the far reaches of the Never Never, before it had killed more than 40 or 50 wizards. All things considered, it could have been a lot worse. But the fact that it had been the gathering of Lafortier's former political allies who had been subject to the attack occasioned an enormous outcry of suspicion, with the offended parties claiming that the Merlin had disregarded their safety, been negligent in his security precautions, etc., etc. The fact that the attack had occurred while unmasking Lafortier's true killer was brushed aside. There was political capital to be had. Basically, the entire supernatural world had heard about Lafortier's death, the ensuing manhunt for Morgan, and the dust-up during his trial, though most of the details were kept quiet. Though there was never any sort of official statement made, word got out that Morgan had been conspiring with Peabody, and that both of them had been killed during their escape attempt. It was a brutal and callous way for the council to save face. The Merlin decided that it was ultimately less dangerous for the wizards of the world if everyone knew that the council responded to Lafortier's murder with a statement of deadly strength and power, i.e., the immediate capture and execution of those responsible. But I knew that whoever Peabody had been in bed with, the people who had really been responsible, knew that the council had killed an innocent man, and one of their largest military assets at that, to get the job done. Maybe the Merlin was right. Maybe it's better to look stupid but strong than it is to look smart but weak. I don't know. I'm not sure I want to believe that the world stage bears that strong a resemblance to high school. The council's investigators worked more slowly than Lara's had, but they got to the same information by following the money, eventually. The council confronted the White Court with the information. Lara sent them the heads of the persons responsible, literally. Leave it to Lara to find a way to get one last bit of mileage out of Madeline and the business manager's corpses. She told the council to keep the money, too, by way of apology. The next best thing to $6 million in cash buys a lot of oil to pour on troubled waters. He might have wound up with his brain splattered all over a desolate little hellhole in the Never Never, but Peabody had inflicted one hell of a lot of damage before he was through. A new age of White Council paranoia had begun. The Merlin, the Gatekeeper, and Injun Joe investigated the extent of Peabody's psychic infiltration. In some ways, the worst of what he'd done was the easiest to handle. Damn near every warden under the age of 50 had been programmed with that go-to-sleep trance command, and it had been done so smoothly and subtly that it was difficult to detect, even when the master wizards were looking and knew where to find it. Ebenezer told me later that some of the young wardens had been loaded up with a lot more in the way of hostile psychic software, though it was impossible for one wizard to know exactly what another had done. Several of them, apparently, had been intended to become the supernatural equivalent of suicide bombers, the way Lucio had been. Repairing that kind of damage was difficult, unpredictable, and often painful to the victim. It was a long summer and autumn for a lot of the wardens, and a mandatory psychic self-defense regimen was instituted within weeks. It was tougher for the members of the senior council, in my opinion, all of whom had almost certainly been influenced in subtle ways. They had to go back over their decisions for the past several years and wonder if they'd been pushed into making a choice, if it had been their own action, or if the ambiguity of any given decision had been natural to the environment. The touch had been so light that it hadn't left any lasting tracks. For anyone with half a conscience, it would be a living nightmare, especially given the fact that they had been leading the council in time of war. I tried to imagine second-guessing myself on everything I'd done for the past 8 years. I wouldn't be one of those guys for the world.